Hello, storytellers and creatives. And this is the Write Script Reviews Season 1, Episode 5. And today we're going to be talking about the original legal drama on ABC called For Life. And you might be wondering why I'm titling this Season 2, Episode 1. For those of you who follow my YouTube channel, I've already done reviews of all the episodes of season one, so you can find all of them directly on my YouTube page, The Write Script Consulting. But from here on out, it's all going to be on my podcast. So let's dive in. For those of you who are familiar with this, you already know that Aaron Wallace is still fighting to get home, because he's in prison for a crime he didn't commit. And this is actually based on a true story, and it opens up onto the aftermath of the prison riot. And then we have a whole new warden in charge. Aaron Wallace was given a retrial, and then we see Glenn Maskins, and we find out that he's up for attorney general. And he's given the proposition to simply take a deal, but at his own expense. And in that prison, there's now a target on Aaron's back. And it opens up with Aaron using voiceover. And this is why I tell you guys with voiceover, it's a great way to understand the psyche of your characters, to understand what they're thinking, their innermost thoughts, what they don't really share with even their loved ones. And this is a great example with Aaron. He says, "I used to have a vision of what it would be like to see a jury declare my innocence in front of the world. Finally, stepping out of this place, no longer a convicted drug kingpin, just a man going home to his family. But that was a long time ago, before I knew what it would take, before I understood how powerful the forces against me really were and what they were willing to do, going after my wife, threatening my friends, leveraging everything I care about against me. So what if that was just a fantasy? What if life doesn't really work that way? What if I somehow get my freedom but have to give up the justice?" Then it's also revealed that Aaron is technically now still a felon with no law license. And the powers that be, at this point, they're scrambling because they know they're screwed. And this is why they're making a desperate play on what Aaron holds near and dear to his heart, his family and his friends. And his wife, Marie, is an RN, registered nurse. She's afraid she might lose her job or, worst case scenario, go to prison. And he might have to let go of being a lawyer after all he worked for. And at first, Aaron claims it's a means to an end, but he actually developed a real passion for it. Marie tells him not to accept what they're offering him, and that he's better than that, and he's come too far to turn back now. Then we see a prison guard warning Aaron that the warden is also in cahoots with Maskins. He advises Wallace to take the deal and get the hell out while he still can. Now, you know that's bad. And what I like about this show is that they show the corruption, how everything is connected. They're not all separate entities. A lot of the time, the district attorney is in bed with the warden. And when I say in bed with the warden, I don't mean literally. Of course, I mean figuratively, but that's a conflict of interest because they're in cahoots, which means it's so easy for somebody who is innocent to slip through the cracks, to not get a fair trial, to not even have their rights met. In fact, they have their rights violated and downright ignored. And then we see Aaron asking to see Jamal, and he finally sees him and lets him know that the most they're going to charge you with is attempted murder. And Jamal's like, "Well, I'm willing to go through with it. It is what it is." Then It gets real interesting. We see Henry talking to Dez, and Henry kind of gets to Dez when it comes to guilt. He's like, Dez, what did you sign up for? Is this what you had in mind? Was this what you dreamed of when you got into law? Corruption? Really? You're in too deep. And of course, Aaron comes in, stands before them and the new warden, Cyrus Hunt, and he hesitates and ends up not signing the deal when the warden says to him, I hope your wife's still gonna respect you, but hey, maybe your name's not worth all that much to begin with. And at that point, Aaron's like, you know what? I'm gonna need a few more days to think about it. And at this point, Dez sees how this could go, and he's like, Maskins, this is too much. What we're doing is not only illegal, but corrupt and immoral and unethical. And Dez even says to him, Cyrus Hunt is a maniac. He baited him. Wallace figured out that Hunt has microphones everywhere. Why are we playing this game and using these tactics? What's our next move, huh? You're already going after the wife. Are we going after the daughter too? You helped Andrew Torres flee the country, remember? And that piece of dialogue is very significant because for those of you who don't know or don't remember, Andrew Torres was the key witness that Aaron was supposed to bring up to the stand. But on that court date, he never showed up. And the reason he never showed up was because Maskins made him flee the country so he wouldn't have to testify. And Maskins isn't going down without a fight. He's like, oh, come on. You're not starting to think Wallace is innocent. And Dez is like, I don't know, Glenn. And I don't think you do either. And Aaron learns that now he has a target, he's a marked man, and he tells one of his fellow inmates that he helped in a previous case, like, hey, I want you to file a complaint that the COs brought you to the gym and roughed you up, okay? And then we see Sophia, the former warden who was actually trying to handle the inmates in a civilized manner and at least treat them like human beings. She goes in and she says to a female officer or guard, she says, did you know he leaked Aaron Wallace's witness list and a whole bunch of confidential info to Maskins? I need to get my hands on raw footage from the gym of Maskins threatening him. Because with that footage, then they'll have a real case. They'll have solid evidence. And at that point, Maskins is scared, even though he's trying not to show it. He's like, oh no. And then he learns that the footage of him threatening Aaron might be used against him, and he orders Cyrus Hunt to erase it. And at that point, even Cyrus is like, erase it? What? How? And he's like, oh, you'll figure it out. And then Dez is like, I don't even want to know what I just heard. And Maskins is like, but you did hear, so now you're in as deep as I am. And this just goes to show that the powers that be are some crooked individuals, okay? Like, there is nothing they won't do. Like with Maskins, there is no line that he will not cross. He will just keep crossing it, pushing the envelope, pushing the envelope. I don't care who I hurt. I don't care who I destroy. I don't care who I take down with me. I'm not going out of this without a fight. Like, that is how deep and grimy Maskins is. And then, of course, they question Marie, who is Aaron's wife, and they try to break her. They try to interrogate her because remember, in season one, she did give Aaron and Henry that, what is it called? Sorry, guys, let me see. I have notes on this. It was a medical record of the woman who was the key witness in that trial, the woman who overdosed at Aaron's former nightclub. And of course, Marie is smart, so she ends up pleading the Fifth Amendment. And then Maskins arrives and presents Dez with More evidence. Well, I wouldn't really call it evidence. I would call it more of a ploy, a power play. Des then goes on to say, Miss Wallace, we have a sworn affidavit from a custody officer at Belmore named Nick Trammell. He asserts on July 21st, 2019, that your husband handed you a letter in the Belmore visiting room. He recalls that the letter was addressed to a Jose and signed by someone named Molly. Jose was the name of your husband's first defendant, and Molly was the key witness in that trial. Did you know that this note was then used as evidence, was forged? And Marie remains silent. Aaron is now on his way to court, and he asks the guard, how can you even put on that uniform day after day and work at a place like Belmore? Like, how? If you have an ounce of a conscience in you, or an ounce of compassion in you, how can you work at this hellhole? And the guard is like, well, I try to be fair, but Aaron's like, no, you don't. It wasn't until I impressed you at the DA's office that day that you started to see me as anything more than just a number. Now remember, in season one, when Aaron was able to spout all those facts and legalities and terminologies, people didn't expect that from a black man who's locked up at that. The narrative is that, oh, black men are dumb, they're uneducated, they don't know anything, they don't understand the law, they don't know this, yada, yada, yada. But Aaron ended up proving him wrong. That's why now this guard has respect for him, because Aaron was spouting off things that, quiet as it's kept, that guard didn't even know. And Aaron knows that now the guard kind of holds him in high regard, so he asks him for a favor. He's like, look, while I'm waiting for the judge to rule on my subpoena, I'm gonna need some time with my wife and Roswell in the hallway. The guard is like, you got it. And Marie and Henry and Aaron all get together, and they're like, what are we gonna do? There's still a chance that Marie might get arrested, and Aaron doesn't want to take that chance because that's his wife. He'll do anything to protect her. And at this point, he goes to his other witness, his childhood friend, Mikey. Now, you remember when they went to Michael's house in season one and they tried to convince him, like, look, you were the one selling drugs in the club. And you let Aaron take the fall for it. You guys were supposed to be best friends. How could you do that? And Aaron records on his iPhone, like, look, hey, Mikey, now I understand how bad you must be feeling about how everything is going down. I get that you were too scared to go back inside. Now that I've been through it, seen what it is, I understand a man doing anything to keep himself out. Even throwing his best friend under the bus. You remember when we were kids, that deal we had? Whenever we got in trouble, one would step up for the both of us, take the licks. I done 9 years for you, Mikey. Now it's time for you to take the licks. You owe me. And that was really powerful because Aaron is pretty much saying two things at once. He's saying, I get it. You didn't want to go to prison. Nobody does. But at the same time, you let me fall for something that not only destroyed me, it destroyed my family, and it destroyed my livelihood and my business. So you owe me. And now the question is, will Mikey do the right thing? And then we see a guard coming to Aaron, and he's like, hey, Jamal wants to see you, but it ends up being a beatdown. The other inmates jump Aaron, the guard condones it, and then Jamal shows up and reveals that, okay, Aaron, you're good. Your debt is now paid. And Aaron's like, I was expecting something different, not a beatdown, but Jamal's like, look, your debt is paid. You wanted Huey on your side. He's on our side now. And now we see Hunt coming to Aaron, and Hunt is like, huh, quite a stunt you pulled with Huey. What did you offer him? And Aaron's like, I saw the surveillance video from the gym. You erased it. And at this point, Hunt feels like, you know, I got this. It's in my back pocket. He can't prove it. He's like, that would be tough to prove. Aaron's like, yeah, unless I already had it when I issued my subpoena. I figured you were dirty and desperate enough to destroy the tapes, even knowing it was a felony, and combine that with the beatdown you ordered on me. Go ahead, check it out. I have a backup copy I ordered outside of Belmore. And at this point, Hunt is like, okay, you're not bluffing. What do you want? And Aaron's like, I want Maskins on a platter. And then, light at the end of the tunnel. I keep saying Mickey. I don't know why I keep doing that. But anyway, Mikey finally comes and defends Aaron on video. Henry exposes how Maskins threatened Wallace to the attorney general, whose name is Allen. And he's like, look, this is doctored video of an empty gym, obstruction of justice. If we don't catch Maskins, Allen, it's all gonna come and trickle down to you. And at that point, Allen is still the attorney general. That's the last thing he wants, right? Right. So now we see Aaron awaiting trial. Henry recites the Serenity Prayer. And remember, Henry is a former alcoholic. Remember what I tell you guys about giving your characters vices. And then we see Maskins and Dez waiting to talk to Allen. And at this point, Maskins finally has not a human moment, but an honest moment. And he says to Dez, you know, I used to think there was a higher purpose to what we do, that punishing the guilty and protecting the innocent was somehow a noble endeavor. But really, we're just running a factory, shipping people in and out of prisons, trying to decide who deserves what, having to choose almost arbitrarily which handful of cases warrant our time and attention. I don't even remember what turned it, why we ever decided to go full court press on Aaron Wallace. Does it make sense to you that who we are and what we're about should somehow come down to how we handled him? You know, he tried to tell me this was all about race, as if that's why we went after him. If he didn't want to get arrested, he shouldn't have had a drug dealer working for him in his nightclub. We didn't make that decision. He did. Anyway, it's all over now. Soon I'll be sitting in that chair. You'll be taking my place. We can finally move on. Forget all about Aaron Wallace. And that moment with Maskins is very important because it shows how he's in denial. And remember, no racist ever really wants to be called that, you know, even if they do questionable things. Maskins is the type who would plant drugs on people if he could get away with it. I know that's kind of a loaded statement, but this man clearly has no boundaries. He has no impulse control. He is riding on the fumes of his position at this point. He let a title get to him, and it totally warped his ego. At this point, it's all about power. And the thing about Dez, now he's done his dirt too. He's not innocent at all, but he does have a limit on what he will and will not do. And at this point, he's thinking, do I want to be on the right side of history or the wrong side of history? Do I want to be on the right side of the law or the wrong side? And right now, keeping an innocent man in prison for something he didn't even do, that's the wrong side of everything. And Dez says to Maskins, can we, Glenn, just forget about him? And Maskins is like, well, God, I hope so. And the door opens, and we see Allen. He sits right in front of them, and he's like, you know, about Michael Miller. I understand you tried to leverage his wife against him. And Maskins is like, Well, she tampered with evidence, obstructed justice, and committed a HIPAA violation. Alan is like, okay, and you asked Cyrus Hunt to end the lockdown I mandated after the riot in order to intimidate Aaron Wallace after the man had asked for protective custody and a prison transfer. Maskins is like, well, where did you hear that? He's scrambling now. And Alan's like, oh, Henry Roswell. Maskins is like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. He's like, no, I'm not kidding you. But Cyrus Hunt confirmed it. He also told me that you and he colluded to destroy evidence. I saw the raw footage, Glenn. Your threats to Wallace before you had Hunt erase it. And Maskin starts to speak, and he's like, this is, at this point, Alan stands up. He's like, too far-fetched to be believed beneath the man who is about to take the highest legal office in the state of New York. And Maskin's finally caves and admits why he did all this dirt. He's like, I was just trying to make it go away. And Alan's like, oh, like you did with Angelo Torres when you got him out of the country before Wallace could get him on the stand. And remember that little nugget of information. Maskins only told Dez. So at this point, Maskins is looking at Dez like, oh, you traitor. So this is an ambush. And Alan's like, look, I could help you bury some of this, Glenn, but that surveillance video, you try to fight that, you're gonna end up in front of a grand jury. And Maskins is like, okay, what are you saying, Alan? He's like, walk out of here now with your reputation intact. You'll land on your feet in the private sector. And Maskins is like, damn it, I'm gonna lose the power, I'm gonna lose all that stuff. He's like, not quite ready to leave, huh? And Alan's like, oh, don't give me that. You did it to yourself. As Alan leaves, Maskin turns to Dez and goes, wow, Dez, bravo, bravo. But it does show the human side of Dez, that Dez finally did the right thing, even though it did cost him breaking ties with Glenn Maskins. And then we see the news story where Maskins steps down and decides to walk away from it all to go, quote unquote, spend time with his family, even though we all know that's a lie. He's not about to spend time with his family. He's gonna lay low so he can still have a positive rep in the community, and he won't be known as the man who put an innocent black man in prison for 12 years for something he didn't do. Yeah, PR move. Total PR move. And now we see Dez O'Reilly is now the new DA of the Bronx, and Attorney General Alan Burke will stay on. Jamal and Marie are now off the hook. Aaron is now exonerated and is going home and will now get to practice law since Maskins is gone. Dez lets Aaron know, like, hey, the only thing we can't do, the assault charge from the prison riot, the only way out of that is to plead guilty to an A misdemeanor and accept probation. Aaron was like, for 3 years? And Dez is like, look, all you have to do is mind your P's and Q's, stay out of trouble, and you'll be fine. Aaron signs, and he and Henry celebrate. They're like, yay, we finally did it. And Aaron says to Dez, listen, now you have a chance to do better. You know that. Dez doesn't really respond to it, but you can tell he was listening at the very least. Then we see Jamal and Aaron talking, and they're reflecting on the first time they met, got in trouble together. Because remember, at first, they hated each other because Aaron wasn't ever a criminal. At the most, he was an entrepreneur, but not a dirty one. He was pretty much on the straight and narrow. When he got into prison, he didn't understand the rules, the regulations, the etiquette, how to avoid getting beaten up, how not to make enemies. And Jamal had to show him the ropes. So they've come a long way. They're like brothers at this point. And then we hear Aaron's narration, which is through voiceover, and he's like, "I used to be just like you. I had a wife I loved. I had a family and a home. One day, all that changed. And whether I wanted it to or not, that changed me. I had a vision of how it would all come to an end, but sometimes you have to let go of what you're counting on to find another way forward to whatever awaits you on the other side." Then we see Aaron finally leaving Belmore for good. Everyone bids him farewell. It's a beautiful moment to see him finally able to go home, be declared an innocent man, walk out with his dignity intact. And he meets up with Sophia, and she was like, "Hey, I wanted to see it through to the end and watch you walk out of there." And he expresses his gratitude to her, like, "Look, you should be proud. You changed the culture in that place." Then we see Marie pick Aaron up, and they finally hug without walls between them, and she takes him home to their family. And what I like about this is that for the entire series, it's not like Prison Break, you know, where they're in prison forever and then the whole thing is about them trying to break out. Season two is more or less about how Aaron is going to find his way again in the real world, outside of prison, because think about it. He's been in prison for years. Now that he's out of it, it doesn't mean that his problems are over. Because think about it. He might not know about the latest technology. He probably doesn't know about the latest, you know, trends and all that kind of stuff. And also, don't forget mental health. Being locked up and accused for years for something you didn't do, not being able to see your wife, your family, your kids, having your own mother refuse to visit you in prison because now you're such a disappointment to her. Remember, his mother did that to him, and that's going to be addressed in season two in future episodes. And also not being able to see his daughter grow up because I think when she was at least 7 or 8, somewhere around there, that's when he went into prison. And at that point, she had to visit him in prison. So he never got to see her graduate. He didn't even get to see her have the baby. He didn't get to see her go to prom. Like, he missed out on a lot. And even though he's free now, he can never get that time back. So it'll be interesting to see how Aaron adjusts to his newfound freedom, you know, mentally and emotionally, because right now he's holding a lot in. He's holding a lot in because he was never really free to show his emotion being in prison. It was all about survival. It was all about making it from one day to the last. So it'll be really interesting to see his growth and his development this whole season, and I'm really excited about it. But anyway, you guys, thanks so much for tuning in to the podcast. Also, be sure to click the link down below in my bio for a free ebook that I do on character development. And also, if you want to book a service for a script coverage evaluation, feel free to click the other link down in my bio as well. If you have any questions or concerns, you can also reach me on my Instagram at Jessica_WriteScript. Have a good one, you guys, and I'll catch you in the next episode.